Welcome to Winning at Life. Yes, live financial news talk radio. A lot of news to cover with you today. I'm your host, Gregory Ricks. We're going to talk about Social Security. We're going to talk about taxes. We're going to talk about inflation. We're going to talk about the current administration, the previous administration, the administration before that, and how they're impacting your money. I printed a chart this morning. How long can retirees expect to live once they hit 65? Now, probably something I put up on my blog over at gregoryricks.com. I have a news blog where I put up articles that I read throughout the week. I read quite a bit, but I don't give you all that. That would be overload. But typically, we add up a few articles a week that we think are really important. How about Social Security claiming decisions? What about five reasons not to worry about a stock market crash? How about Social Security strategies? Three of them. I've got some stats to give you. Hey, how about a different take? How about the best annuity money can buy? It's a mind shift there. Sometimes I talk about how in my day job, and for new listeners, I've been in the financial services industry for about 40 years. Been on the financial advising side probably neighborhood of 25, 28 years of that. And so I kind of define that wheel, you know, we walk around inside the box, step outside the box, look around, and then we take a big overview. Where a lot of people think working with an advisor is just about investing. And that's really just a part of it when you think about everything that has to be looked at. So I'm gonna give you a little bit of mind shift on the best annuity can buy. Update on Medicare. I've got this guide on inflation here. I don't know how much we'll go to, but I think if we kind of get right to it, what does inflation mean to you? I can give you the simple answer. It's things are going to cost more. And we're going to see it a little bit, but I'm going to give you a little bit of historical on there. And I've got another article regarding crypto regulation that's coming. What's interesting is I saw AMC Theaters is going to start accepting crypto for movies. I honestly don't know quite how that works, but they did say they're not going to accept Dogecoin. That's kind of funny. That crypto that started as a joke, but maybe AMC's still taking it as a joke from that standpoint. Once again, 504-260-0995. Let's talk about some numbers here today that I've got in. The first calendar year, and I've talked about this. This has been going on since last year. Questions regarding first-year president. So you know, we were getting calls in where somebody said, if such and such wins, I'll just say, if Biden wins, what should I do? I think things are going to go bad. The other way the questions were coming in, if Trump wins again, what are we going to do? What should I do with my money? You know, so you had this going back and forth. But the bigger concerns was a change of administration on what's coming. The first calendar year of the 8 years Barack Obama was president, you know, and I go back to when Trump first got in, they were not expecting the market to do well also when he came in the office. But the first calendar year of the 8 years that Barack Obama was president produced an S&P 500 gain of 26.5% total return. The first calendar year of the 4 years that Donald Trump was president, that's in 2017, Barack's was 2009, produced a S&P 500 gain of 21.8% total return. The first calendar year of Joe Biden's presidency has produced so far S&P 500 gain of 26.2% year to date. And yeah, we've got 7 weeks to go. So let's go back to that. He's at 26.2. He served as a vice president under Barack Obama, which had a first year return of 26.5. 5. Well, you can say, well, he beat Trump's the first year. And I just have this feeling that his first year is going to beat Barack Obama's. And there was a lot of skepticism going into that. Another interesting thing is every U.S. president since 1993, Clinton, Bush, Obama, Trump, and Biden began their first year in the White House with total control of Congress. Yeah, that's interesting. Presidents Clinton, Obama, Biden began with Democrats controlling both the House and the Senate. And of course, Presidents Bush and Trump began with Republicans controlling both the House and the Senate. And I'll tell you this, none of them controlled it all the way through. Once midterms hit for Trump, that changed. And I'll tell you what I think the vibe is in Congress now. And if it, you know, we had a few elections recently for governors, so forth. So there's a little bit of change coming. I think change is coming. So what it tells me is the country changed presidents. They also adjust Congress to that favor because the slightly more than 50% that changed administration readjust Congress, and more of the people are wanting some change. And once they get a couple years in, some of them are shifting because they're not like, that's not quite what I was expecting. So we're going to take some control away. So they shift Congress back to the other side and kind of put the brakes on things. And the future for that to work for an incoming administration has really, really got to have to be very good at crossing the aisle. You know, as I mentioned, I've been in this advising industry for a long, long time at helping people. And I go back to what caused me to shift. As a kid, single digits, I'd already shown this knack for being entrepreneurial. Yeah, I started cutting grass for money at age 9 because I could fix a lawnmower. So I owned me a lawnmower as a kid. And I did stuff like that growing up. But one of the magic things that I really liked was compound interest. Charlie Munger, you know, the other half of Berkshire Hathaway, you know about Buffett. You don't hear Charlie that much. But there's a phrase I like that he reminds everybody of is, do not interrupt the compounding. And that's where people make mistakes, whether they completely withdraw from an investment or pause it or spend it all and have to start back again. And do not interrupt it. And that is one of the magic things. And it's best to, even with a small amount, get that started at an early age. It is just tremendous. So that's what's also impacted me in the advising is how to help people do that better. Because one of the things that impacts people from causing them to interrupt it is market volatility. You know, if we go back to year 2000, 1999, I'd say somewhere between post-Great Depression, probably look at the late 30s, we probably had a pretty consistent market all the way up to about 2000. And then volatility really has kind of been a consistent. Some of you said, no, you're wrong. I don't see much volatility. Well, we've had volatility recently. We had it last year. But when you think about the past decade, the market's really been on a roll. For a lot of people, they've really not dealt with negative impact. But volatility causes them to make bad decisions regarding their money and interrupt it. Or they take risk to a level that causes them to exit from the game. And the game is wealth building is what I refer to as. So what also, you know, most of you've heard my backstory and that, you know, my dad was killed when I was in my very early 20s, and Mom came into a seven-figure lump sum settlement along with a guaranteed income. I had tried to twist her arm gently to, hey, you need to take more in the settlement of guaranteed lifetime income and less of the lump sum. So she took this seven-figure lump sum, and the sad thing about that is that lump sum was gone in 10 years. So the impact of that was, gosh, there has to be a better way to help people with that, at least inform them about their decision-making and help people make better decisions. Because at the end of the day, you know, it's not just about ETFs or mutual funds or stock picks. It can be, but if you're not making good decisions, that's not going to do you any good. And some of that is maybe taking too much risk. And that's ultimately what led me to get into the advising side of the financial industry to help people make better decisions. Because when you're out there looking at firms and thinking about how do you make a choice? First off, you need to kind of be adept at figuring out, are they going to put me first? Am I important to who I'm talking to? The other night I shared this is, if you go into a firm and have a meeting and they start talking product in a way of trying to get you to do something, you know, whether it might be REITs, might be annuities, just something where they've really not spent a lot of time on getting to know you, but they just get in there and they start selling. You know, maybe it's because of the way they're compensated. They're compensated to push product. So you kind of have to be worried about that. You go in somebody's office and they start talking about a 30% bonus on an annuity or REITs or something that's paying high yield that seems a little outlandish in a 1.5% 10-year treasury world, you might should say, hey, do you mind a moment? I need to take a break. Got to run to the restroom. Just head home. Leave that meeting. They're not looking out for you. And how do they give advice and help you if they haven't got to know you? You know, the only time I would really go into advice is once we had been well into the meeting and I really got to know what's going on, what they were thinking, what they were looking for. And I'd already figured out, I am not going to be able to fix this or help them. And they don't have enough money left to survive in the direction they're going. I would start giving advice of things they needed to do. And I would just tell them, I said, this probably we're not going to be able to go forward because I can't fix it. And give them the reasons why. And then I would give them advice on what they needed to do going forward to help this situation. And I think that's important. Why? I'm putting them first. And that's what you have to think about there. So ultimately, you have to decide. And look, I'm going to talk to you today about the Invest 50-50 philosophy, our trademarked investment philosophy. But that's only a part of what we do. And I think it is a better way to invest. It increases the probability of your success and reaching your financial destination. But there's so much more to that. And we really shouldn't get deep into that or try and talk you into something like that on the first visit, because there's so much more to talk about: income planning, tax efficiency, estate planning, what to do about health care. So ultimately, what I think you're looking for and how you should look at it is not be wowed by any one part, but you could be, your awareness and understanding should be increased of what's going on and maybe have a new view on it. But ultimately, you can go anywhere and get an ETF, get a mutual fund, get an annuity. You can buy stocks about anywhere out there. But can who you're working with get you to that financial destination? Are they increasing your chances of success in getting to your financial destination? You know, and another take on it is they shouldn't be completely agreeable with what you want to do. I ask this often: how many retirement plans have you built? Think about that. How many have you built? For most people that are do-it-yourselfers, one. How often do you update that? How often do you strategize that? Are you good enough to see your errors? No, you've only built one. You don't have experience in that. We've built thousands. And how we look at the process and building a plan, you know how long it's good for? The short term. It should be constantly looked at and improved upon. Here's we're going to jump to a break, and I'm going to go over some concern sheets from a public event I held this week, and we'll talk about some questions and concerns that come up in that. I had a call this week from a client, and we get a lot of calls every day because I encourage people to call with questions, clients and non-clients. But this was a client asking me about Evergrande, the looming danger in China's financial system. And I've done some more reading since I talked about this. I do think there's a possible contagion. And I had a gentleman call, and he was basically, I've read about this, and this isn't just new news. It's been out there a little while. But he was asking, what should I do? I'm thinking about exiting the market in his 401k, essentially going to cash. That's potentially interruption of compounding. And I said, you know, I would probably reduce exposure to international, especially on the bonds. And if you're really concerned about it, dial back a portion of your portfolio. And I said, I probably would not reduce more than half, because a couple positives on that is our system here in the United States is flush with money. If there's a pullback because of it, it'll be temporary and take back off again. It may create a buying opportunity. The other part to that is I don't think it's going to last long. And what we've talked about in the past and going back several years back is talking about the ghost cities that were built in China. And all this built with debt, and the whole problem with Evergrande and other real estate firms is they borrowed a lot of money to do this, and the people didn't come. And a lot of people, instead of investing in the market, which their markets are really, really horrible, so they invested in real estate. And still, once again, these cities did not fill up, but they have all this debt, and China's leadership is trying to curtail that. And I always said there's going to be a day they have to pay the price for what they were doing back then. And this is it. This is those bills are coming due, and they have to, as a country, as an economy over there, and creating this inflated GDP, which wasn't real because they were just spending money internally, building and making work. It's just like it was the ultimate wait, make work projects. It wasn't based upon need of housing. And yeah, so that's why these problems are coming up now. And there's probably going to be some really, really big defaults in China. So just connecting the dots there to the past.
Jack in Covington, you're on Winning It Life with Gregory Ricks. How can we help you, Jack?
Yes, good morning to you, Helen. I really enjoy your show. I don't know if it's appropriate for the show or not, but anyway, I have an IRA that I'm 68 years old. I have an IRA that I have been taking money out of just a few dollars at a time, like $1,500 a year. But with the hurricane hit and I had a severe damage to my home, I needed to take some of that money out just to get things going. And my question is am I going to be able to put that money back in and still have it deferred, or am I going to have to just declare it all as income?
I offhand don't know if they've given us any help on that. I'm looking here real quick.
I know there are some circumstances where they kind of waive the penalty it's not really a penalty, it's income.
Yeah. I am looking here to see, generally when there has been a federal declaration of disaster, there's usually a little bit help on that. And It looks like I've got some IRS announcements right here. So let's take a look at that and see what we have. As a result of the destruction, this was what article? I'll give some credit here. And it's by Michael Schiller. As a result of destruction caused by Hurricane Ida that began on August 26th of this year, the IRS announced that tax relief postpones until January 3rd of 2022 certain deadlines falling on or after the 26th of January. Deadlines that apply to individual retirement accounts, health savings accounts, Cordell education accounts, and so forth. I don't see anything here where there's probably some relief on that. You know, when did you actually take them? You've been taking some, you took some additional money out?
Yeah, I took like $10,000 out.
Yeah. What date did you take that out, by the way?
It was back in August.
Yeah, so we're past the 60-day rule on that, which right. You can only do once. Every 12 months as an aggregate on there. I would reach out to your tax professional that you're working with. We're going to have we're having Jude Heath here in the second hour, about 20 minutes. He's actually going to be in studio with me here. And I'll tell you what, we'll pop that question to him right away out the gate, because you know what? Other people have those issues at all.
Yeah, I know. I'm with two other people that had to do the same thing, yeah.
And we'll find out what's going on there.
I appreciate it.
Okay, thank you for the call. See, like I said earlier, somebody's always going to ask a question that's going to help them out. Let's see. Well, that's not getting there. Looking for, I saw something on Ed Slott's website over at irahelp.com, so... But we'll talk to Jude about that in a few minutes. He'll be on top of that for sure. There was a Stephanie Pomboy. I follow her on Twitter, and so she had put a note out there, you know, something to the effect of, this is not a surprise. But hurdles, the article she was pointing to is hurdles on the horizon, new crypto regulation, both the infrastructure bill and positioning of the SEC mark milestones that will alter digital asset landscape. The infrastructure bill that recently passed U.S. Congress contains digital asset provisions designed to generate revenue and could hinder the crypto's growth and stifle innovation. The regulations require any party involved with the exchange of digital assets to register as a broker and report all cash payments exceeding $10,000 to the IRS. Significant backlash from blockchain stakeholders has initiated debate regarding the bill's definition of a broker. The current definition requires developers, cryptocurrency startups, and even miners to enact Know Your Customer measures. This is a pretty big deal. In addition to the infrastructure bill, the SEC providing little guidance has shuttered Coinbase's lending program with the threat of a lawsuit. The SEC has also proposed registration requirements for stablecoin issuers. By these moves by the SEC have implications within DeFi as more regulations arise to minimize and decentralize the structure of crypto. What's going to also push this forward is when people start losing money as a result of not understanding, lack of disclosures, confusion is going to get the SEC looking around quite a bit. Once again, some more added to that. Another facet of the bill requiring attention is the new reporting standards laid out by the IRS. Well, crypto funds custodians already possess the capabilities to record and file transactions. Experts are expecting difficulties tracking exchanges in the market. All crypto funds and custodians will need to ensure their technology and staff can maintain the records essential to ensuring all transactions are properly reported. So, you can't say I lost it. We didn't do it. That's a problem. The SEC is continually enacting new rules and regulations that will make digital assets more centralized market. Shutting down Coinbase's lending program was a move towards a centralized future that exemplified the governing body's increased desire for structure and providing the utmost, here it is, and providing the utmost protection to the investor and ensuring lenders stay whole. That is it right there, that line in the article written by Amanda Bonello. They are going to look to protect investors to make sure money's not lost to corruption, through crime, through taking advantage of people, through misleading people, and ensuring lenders stay whole, that people aren't getting in over their head. Probably what's coming is it's probably, and this will be a game changer for all of it. If it hasn't been, it's probably going to be at some point be defined and declared, here's the word, a security. So that's going to change everything. So I really believe that's where it's going. So let's talk about Social Security for a moment. You know, back October, Social Security Administration basically said, hey, Social Security is going up 5.9% in 2022. That 5.9% cost of living adjustment will begin with benefits payable to more than 64 million Social Security beneficiaries in January. So that's a pretty good number, once again, on the increase. They also kind of gave a guess to what Medicare premiums might be. They actually estimated it at 6.7%. Hang on to your seats. The standard premium for Medicare's outpatient care coverage will jump by 14.5% for 2022. That's a heck of a lot more than that estimate of 6.7%. That was a giant swing and a miss right there. Swing and a miss. The standard premium for Part B, which covers outpatient care and durable equipment, will be $170.10 next year, up $21.60 from $148.50 this year. Yeah, let that soak in. Your premium was $148.50. Now it's going to be $170.10. So that was announced this week. The program's trustees had estimated this past summer the premium would be $158.50. You know, folks on fixed income, you know, that's not helping things. The deductible for Part B will be $233, up $30. That's a 14.8% increase from this year. The bigger than anticipated increase is partly attributed to rising prices and utilization across the healthcare system and congressional action that limited the increase in 2021 Part B premium. So another part of this, yeah, they're catching up. Additionally, contingency reserves have been increased to account for potential new treatment costs incurred by the system. Meanwhile, the deductible for Medicare Part A, the hospital coverage per benefit period, which generally starts when you're admitted to the hospital, will be $1,556 in 2022. That's an increase of $72 from this year's benefit of $1,484. Yeah, there's you some inflation right there. I was not expecting that Medicare standard premium to go up that much. I was kind of trusting the estimate of around 6.7%. And heck, that's double right there coming in at that. So we're going to feel some more inflation coming. It's not ending, but this doesn't go on forever. Over the past 170 years, we've had 20 times that inflation was up more than 7%. Last year, inflation in 2020 was up 1.4%. In the 2010s, inflation averaged 1.8%. fuel is probably the largest impact of all of it, but I'm just telling you my take on it. Yeah, this is it catching up. A bunch of you probably remember Jimmy Carter's presidency and as well as high interest rates. I don't think we're going to see high interest rates because the Fed doesn't want to pay a lot of interest rate on their debt. So good thing there. Uncle Sam can afford a lot of interest rate as well. We are a leveraged society. Part of making this work is the GDP has to grow every year. So they need you to keep spending and buying and leveraging. Long as you manage it well, that's the society that we're in. So once again, Scott Minard of Guggenheim thinks we're going to ultimately see the Fed rate to get up to 2 to 2.25. I think it's not going to quite get there before they halt it, but it's going to cause some volatility in the markets as well. It's going to cause bond values to go down. And that's where you might need to look at how you're managing your assets and get proper diversification from asset classes. You know, I'm a big fan. I like me some stock. Yeah. But I like to do it through the indices. I like the S&P 500, the Dow, the NASDAQ, and others as well. Why? That gets me diversification. We're not going to beat the indexes consistently. If you can't beat them, join them. I like me some bonds, but I like it through ETFs, exchange-traded funds. That gets me diversification, gets me efficiency as well. But I'm also looking for shorter duration for a little while because the increase in interest rates don't impact me as much. I like index-linked investing where I can get a portion of the upside of the market. When volatility starts and the market drops, I don't have any negative exposure because I have an insurance company take off the risk. We use insurance companies to take that risk off. And then tactical, when momentum shifts, some of your money should be in that asset class and following the momentum. And also, it's kind of prepared for that unexpected thing we don't see coming that could even put that asset class to cash. If you want more information about the Invest 50/50 philosophy, call my office, 504-832-9200. Go to my website, gregoryricks.com, and also share with your friends the show, Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks.
Hey, Walter, you're on Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks. How can we help you, sir?
Good morning, gentlemen. Enjoy the show.
Awesome. Thanks.
Question on the Social Security. I'm 60. My wife is 62, or 61. Next year, she'll be eligible for Social Security. She has not worked. She's been able, I work, and she's been able to stay home and play grandma for the past 10 years or so. So we're thinking about turning on her Social Security when she turns 62 in order to help pay down debt before I hopefully retire around 65. So I guess, my question is that sound feasible or should we wait on hers or?
Who is going to have the largest Social Security benefit between you two?
I am.
Okay. And is she's turning hers on based on her work record, right?
Correct, yes, sir.
Does she have 35 years in?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Well, she's taking a pretty good haircut on that that's not going to be made up in the future.
Yeah, I figured that. But however, whenever I turned my on, then she would be able to file off of mine, correct?
Well, if it's a larger, if 50% of your benefit based on your FRA, which is going to be 67, if that's a larger benefit, but it still receives that haircut doesn't go away just because you're turning it on. She's locking in that reduction even when she switches to yours. Were you aware of that?
Sure. So yeah, I knew that it would be lower than what was expected, but I would think that it would still be, I'm going based off of the Social Security website when if you put on out down at the bottom what her expected would be when I turned mine on. It's definitely an increase in what she would be able would be making off based off of her work.
Okay, let me do some math real quick here just to make this simple to understand. Let's say her and I'm going to use everything based on age 67. Let's say your benefit's going to be $2,000 a month at 67. Mm-hmm. And her benefit at 67, let's make it simple, is going to be $800 a month if she waited till then. But you would have to turn yours on for her to get that record as well to that increase. So assuming everything being equal, hers is $800 and yours is $2,000. So 50% of yours would be $1,000. So yes, that would be a larger benefit, and it will increase her benefit by $200 if we were all waiting till then. But she's going to turn hers on at 62, and that $800 is going to be reduced. When she switches to that $1,000 benefit, it's going to be reduced by the same percentage that the $800 was. So you will get some increase. It's not going to be a lot.
Yeah. Okay.
In that case, but that haircut goes forward to when she switches to your benefit, if it's going to be a larger benefit. I don't have a problem with turning it on, long as you understand how it works going forward. You've got the largest benefit, and we really need that benefit to go to FRA. And for all listeners, just understanding kind of conceptually how this goes. So if she turns it on at 62 or her FRA at 67, by age 80, no matter which one she turns on, she's going to basically have withdrawn the same amount over that period, because the 67 is larger than the 62, but the 62 is coming out for 5 years earlier. So she does receive that money. It's just beyond, living beyond age 80, assuming she's in good health. You both make it to 65. She's living to 90-something. You're living to late 80s. And she's going, when you pass, she's going to draw the larger check. But beyond age 80, if you defer waited to FRA, you're receiving more money thereafter, or even deferred to 70, than you would have at age 62. 62, you're locking it in. But I don't have a problem with the smaller account turning on earlier, because it does help. And that's where ultimately the decision is, where rubber meets the road, is kind of what I always like to say. That's the difference maker. Is if you need that money to make things work long time, then that's the right decision. We have Jude Heath with us this hour of J. Heath & Company, CPAs. And you can call in and ask your question. It's 504-260-0995, and reach out to us through the Winning at Life app as well. Jude, how you been?
Great. It's a busy time of year for local IDA tax folks. The IRS, although we get until January 3rd to file in the region as an IDA extension, the IRS is closing the e-filing option a week from today, on Saturday. And so we're rushing everybody up, because the IRS is not handling paper filing very well right now.
Not to hate on them any, but they're not handling a lot of stuff very well. Are they still, for the most part, working remotely?
A lot of them are. Of course, they have problems matching up documents. I just answered a letter for a client. You know, anytime a client gets a nasty letter from them, it's disconcerting, to say the least. They didn't match his payment, and you know, they sent him a nasty note that he owes interest and penalty, and I have record that he clearly paid. And so you can't get him on the phone. So we just, as our industry progresses, we just have to make sure that everything goes out certified mail to protect our clients' interests.
Wow, that's crazy. And so a lot of returns got pushed back to beyond the deadlines. And I have this feeling that nothing's slowing down for you, because January's about to be here in, what, 6 weeks? And that's a whole new tax year of getting after it. Hey, did you hear the caller earlier? We had a caller regarding some of the Hurricane Ida relief questions, and he's took a distribution from his IRA and was wanting to know if there's any relief or way he can put that money back in. He's outside of that 60-day rollover option, you know, that's kind of available aggregate of all accounts once every 12 months. So any help for him there?
Yeah, I just worked on a CARES Act IRA for a client that he took money out. Their intention, if things get better, is to pay it back. But in the middle of that, you know, you're able to spread that income out over 3 years. So, you don't have to pay the penalty on the withdrawal, and you get 3 years to pay it back. And so I told the client that, in the event that things turn around and they can put that money back in, that, we'll get them any taxes that they paid back.
Okay, just want to be clear, Jude, this is regarding Hurricane Ida. He took the $10,000 distribution in September of this year because of Hurricane Ida. He needed that money. So if CARES Act has some leftover help from that, but he didn't take it out because of a COVID situation.
I am not aware of any removal of Ida for either the 10% penalty or the taxation. Obviously, there's going to be some casualty losses. He'll be able to negate some income based on that, but not knowing his tax situation, his losses, his uninsured losses, it would be difficult to know whether we would get any relief from removing that $10,000 from his retirement.
Yeah, so he doesn't have any options of putting that back in because he's past the 60 days. I didn't see anything in What and Where. I'm pretty attuned to that as well, just like you are, but I thought I'd ask you, since you're on the show with us today, and because I didn't see it, I just thought maybe that's something I missed. But yeah, that's going to be
no tax nothing bill. Beyond the 60 days.
So beyond that, he does have some options, regarding losses and stuff. So how does that kind of work on your tax return with damages and such? Is there some tax relief to deduct or expense that or itemize it?
Yeah. In presidentially declared, disaster areas, which of course the Ida is, you still have that 10% AGI floor that you have to, deduct from your losses. But so it'd be good to, if there's any control over income as to whether, he has to take any more income, you have to kind of watch that through the end of the year to control your 10% floor. But yeah, you do get your losses, and it would be uninsured, so I don't know his insurance situation. I know talking with different folks, a lot of the insurance estimates are coming back low because of, different roofing costs and things like that. So it seems like there might be some uninsured losses that are getting ready to hit some returns coming up.
Yeah, could that be because of deductibles that's causing that, or is it just the estimates are coming in under cost?
It's both. Those wind and hail deductibles are high. It's a co-insurance, and it's a lot of them are percentages now. And so, your first, $8,000 or something like that, you cover that. That's your piece of the co-insurance.
Yeah.
So, it could be both. And, for clients and taxpayers and insured that have had damages, obviously your first goal is just to get back living again, get your roof back over your house and, start to fix your damage. And you got to, pull all these estimates together along with what you've spent and, try to calculate how much you're out. So it's some homework you have to do once, when you're in these loss situations.
Yeah. I've been hearing this a good bit lately about the estimates coming under. There was a couple conversations this week regarding that. And couple of them said, we've already got the check. And I said, well, is it going to cover? Oh no, we're just going to, as we go through this process, we can go reapply for that to be adjusted or corrected. And then another person that their estimate was like 50% of what their losses were. So they're having to go back and go through that again there. So this is quite different. And I don't remember that much going back to Hurricane Katrina, if it was similar situations, but one thing that's impacting, like you mentioned, is those wind deductibles are much higher. And we know half the people don't have adequate emergency savings. So, yeah, this is going to be kind of problematic on this go around.
Yeah, one thing that's different this time is, and I think you hit on it, Gregory, is with other storms and whatnot, I don't remember this whole reconsideration process. And I've heard that from a number of clients that, oh, you know, either the agent or, you know, the inspector, they came out and said, yeah, if costs are a little different, just, you know, submit for reinspection. And that sounds fuzzy math to me. I'd like to know what I'm going to get. So I'm feeling like some of these bigger ones are going to wind up, you know, in litigation. I think that, you know, whenever you ask for reconsideration, that feels like you're almost towards the end and you're asking for a little on the back end.
I agree with you. And if there's a big difference that you're thinking it is already, I'd kind of like that deal worked out on the front end, because how you could get a, and let's say if you're a third short, you get a third way, you know, this contractor's going to want to be paid. And I could see that getting ugly on both ends, with the people you're having do the work are going to expect to be paid for the project, and you're going to expect the insurance company to pay, and you're in the middle of that. So you're going to have the contractor coming after you, and then you're going to have to go after the insurance company. I could see this getting drawn out and ugly over time.
Right, and just sheer numbers, Gregory. I mean, when you look at the numbers of folks that I've heard that, you know, a lot of roofs need to be replaced, whatnot, a lot of interior damage, the folks that are handling those claims at the different insurance companies, they haven't beefed up staff. And so, you know, just like, you know, the SBA folks, you know, for business owners that are looking to borrow, they're getting their calls answered, but, you know, not a whole lot of help. But we're under, you know, there's a little bit of a labor shortage in some of these areas. And so you're kind of asking for help that folks that are already working double time. So, It's going to be interesting to watch this thing progress. We're going to have to keep our keep tempers calm and cool, and, you know, try to get through this and get our houses and our businesses back in order.
Are taxes going up? This is how I've been asking the questions. You know, when recent public speaking events, I'll ask the audience. I said, "Look," and I've already done this a few times where I've got them to raise their hands for something, then the question, you know, cause that response where a number of attendees would raise their hand. So I ask it this way. For those that think taxes are going to stay the same or go down, raise your hand. Or in this case, blow your horn. And if you're not driving, you could raise your hand. You know what? We're not getting a response when I ask that question. Generally what happens is people laugh. And we do know it's going Tax Cut Jobs Act that was passed under Trump's administration early in sunsets, I believe, January 1st of 2026. So I'm going to ask Jude, do you think taxes are staying the same or going down?
I don't think they're going down. I think they're going to go up. One of the things that we saw in the Build Back Better negotiations was there's a lot of needs, and they have to figure out a way to pay for them. And so, you know, when I talk to my clients, I just talked to a man yesterday that selling a building, and you know, wanted to know, should he hold on or wait for taxes to come down? And I said, no, that's, you know, mostly capital gain. We want to sell that as soon as you can negotiate a good price. Doesn't have to be this year, but I don't see capital gains taxes going down for this man. And so that's my feel on it, is that we've got a lot to pay for, be it, you know, the unwinding, quantitative easement. There's a list. And the only way we can pay for it is taxing somebody.
Yeah. And he'd be waiting quite a while for taxes to go down. I'm just not seeing that. Even with, say, change in administration next year, I really don't see that happening as well, taxes going down. What I do see that I'm pretty confident is they're going to raise the capital gain tax and have probably another bracket along with an increase in that. Is that kind of the feeling you're getting?
Yes. Yes. And that bracket, you know, might or might not feel good. Sometimes folks, when they get caught in a bracket, they feel like, well, you know, I'm not hardly making anything. Well, yeah, but, you know, that's what Congress voted in, and, you know, that's the bracket you're in. So
you could see it.
Yeah,
even,
I agree with you, Gregory.
You could see it not only have a higher bracket in there, but that bracket could push capital gains at a certain level. They've talked about being taxed as ordinary income as well. That's significant.
Yes, and there was some conversation about a stepped up capital gains tax. I just talked to a man yesterday trying to figure out whether he wants to hold on to his building and let his children figure it out upon his death. And, you know, I encouraged him, you know, if you're same tax, same family, sell it. Sell your building now, and that way you've got some money to put in. But he, of course, you know, it's an emotional thing. He doesn't want to do it, and I understand. But I'm kind of telling folks that with asset prices, taxes, you know, now's a real good time to, if you're thinking about at least rebalancing or liquidating, now's a good time to start looking at that stuff.
You know, that's kind of interesting. You're kind of like, if you're thinking of selling it, you probably should, versus trying to keep it in the family. So you alluded to there where and they've talked about this, that step up basis going away possibly on some items or everything. And that's significant right there. And I think that's a dangerous thing on perpetual wealth being kept. And that's just going to cause a lot more assets, because people have value in property or businesses and such. And by by inheriting it where it wouldn't be taxable on being inherited, is going to be taxable no matter what on that. And then that's going to cause assets to have to be sold, because people, you know, they can have wealth and property and assets, but may not have wealth in cash. So that's a big impact. What do you say?
I agree with you. I think at the very least, it incentivizes a repricing. I don't know, you know, we haven't seen any law on it. It's just, you know, bubbling. But I just don't know what's the value of that. You know, what do you have to do? Do you have to get an appraiser in? Can you get two or three appraisals? You know, it's so many questions. But for what's law right now, and for the clients that are coming in saying, you know, what do I do? I think, it's at least a conversation of what do you have? What's on your net worth statement? Should we look at liquidating some of this stuff to cash, maybe replacing some assets, you know, repositioning things to set you up, you know, for the next 5, 10, 15 years, you know, that sort of thing. I think that you probably say the same thing. If somebody comes in heavy in real estate, it's time to, you know, think about, look at that and see where those different properties are going.
Yeah, when you talk about somebody holding a number of rental properties and real estate, how long are you looking to hold it? And let's say we've got somebody that's already retired from having a job out there, but they're still kind of doing this real estate business. And, you know, one of the questions is what, when you are unable to kind of do these repairs or deal with it on an ongoing basis, who's taking that over? How is that going to transition? Because a lot of the cases is they don't have anybody saying, yeah, my kids aren't interested in this at all. And my wife, she surely doesn't want, if something happened to me, to deal with it. So that means that property's probably going to get sold. So that process needs to start being, you need to think about how are you going to unwind this at what time? And if that's something you won't start doing, maybe start thinking about that first piece now. Now you can't, and I don't necessarily want to do things based upon what you think may happen in taxes, because it's just like something could be tax-free and that could go away in the future. and taxes can go up and taxes can go down in the future. Why? It's happened in the past and it's probably going to be that way in the future. But you have to have consideration of everything in doing so. And look, capital gains taxes is a great, great deal, but you do have to kind of think about everything going forward and shifting to that. And if you do put it off and you're higher taxes, it is what it is there, but your assets can appreciate more. You can have more revenue off of that property. I think it's just not necessarily, I'm worried about taxes going up. Let me sell it from that standpoint. I don't know that that should just be the only basis for the decision. What say you?
Agreed.
Yeah, so it really is a lot to think about. So what are some of your recommendations? And we're about to come on a break, so we're going to hold up right here. But when we come back, let's talk about some of your recommendations for action people should take for the rest of the year. Because this is the time to prep and be ready to do tax returns, because this year is winding down. So if you're looking to harvest some tax harvesting, sell some stock, position for capital gain, or maybe position some real estate. You know, I've had discussions with people about, you know, I can make $1 million off my beach house. And my question would, okay, you can. Are you going to want to be an owner of a beach house later? Yeah, I'm going to want to buy another one, but you know, that's going to cost you more. So, you know, you have to think through this, because it isn't all of a sudden you're going to go find some deal soon. I think it's real estate prices are going to stay with us. If you owe $10,000 or more to Uncle Sam, call us and we'll get you some help. You know, it's just that haunting feeling of the IRS is looking for you. You owe them some money. They're sending you some letters. Surely don't ignore those. And Jude, I'm sure you'll chime in with me here, is it's better to interact with them, and you can't get them on the phone, but you need to respond, or they need to call you up and ask for some help, because the IRS will work with you on past debt, which is probably generated from lack of sending in returns. And that's going to hurt you one day if you're wanting to buy something and needing proof of income, especially like a house. But just get that worry off of you from that standpoint. When somebody's in that situation, what do you suggest they do, Jude?
We engage with them. And, you know, like you say, a lot of times just coming in, dropping off their box of records, whatever it is, they walk out with, they're standing a little taller. You can tell the relief that at least I've made a move that at some point we're going to be coming to an end of this. The worry, the anxiety, looking over your shoulder, all the things you talked about, it might be coming to an end one day. And so what we do is, you know, we get started filing. If the IRS is not notifying them of any deficiencies, get started filing. We'll once we get best tax right within the law, we'll start sending those returns in as they become available, catching things up. If they owe something, we'll notify the IRS that we got a few more years left, and then we're going to start working on a payment plan. And the payment plans are very liberal. They charge you interest and penalties, but they give you time. They'll give you 6-7 years, even longer, to monthly payments to start to work things out. And then as you get a little bonus, I tell folks that are in this area, you know, work hard at your job, you know, do good work, because we're going to need income down the road to pay this off. And so if you get a bonus or something like that, we'll throw that at that debt. And so it's not dire. It's not the end of the world, but you're right. We do need to get our arms around it, figure out what it is, get a plan for it, and see to the point where it's going to be paid off in 3, 4, 5, 7 years.
And if you're looking to reach out to Jude and his team and get help on this, as well as if you don't owe back taxes and you've been doing your returns, but want to start getting help, and I always kind of say, we just like the caller earlier that had that tax question, and we couldn't offer him relief because the IRS has not offered up relief on distributions from qualified accounts. But I always say, if you have a question, and one way to start is speak to somebody. Because, Jude, I'm always encouraged people, you've got a question about Social Security, 401k, even tax question, call my firm. And for those that call about taxes, we're going to send them your way to get that question answered. And I encourage them, just to, even if they've got this worry, you know, it could just start with a phone call. Have a few minute conversation to make this work for you. And wherever you're listening from, I probably say, you know, you need to give him a call. It's jheathcpa.com. And let's see, what's that phone number over there? I'm pulling it up right here. The office number is 504-832-1873. 504-832-1873. And if you don't remember all that, call my office over at gregoryrex.com and we can get you some help. So what's some tips about to get ready for tax time? We've got, you know, 6 weeks left of this year. What can they start doing?
Well, of course, you know, assemble your records and be ready to go. If you've got to do some accounting, adding some numbers together to get some sums, you know, get started on some of that in advance. As a general rule, I'm going to always try to not pay more tax this year than you, or have you not pay more tax this year than you possibly can. So we're always going to try to defer tax if we get in that choice, unless we're doing bracket management or something like that with somebody that's getting close to retirement. But, you know, if we have a choice, we're going to pay the least and then, you know, live to fight another year in 2022. And so from our standpoint, we're going to be sending out organizers the first part of January. A tax organizer is just a check sheet of how you've been filing in the past. It gives you a good guide, gives you a chance to identify anything new that came up this year. A lot of new folks are playing around in crypto. The IRS is requiring you to say on your return if you are investing in crypto now. They want a good list of those folks that are involved in that. So, you know, all those things come together towards a tax package that we can start putting together a tax return, letting you look at it, and then eventually, as we get closer to filing season, we tweak it. If we can't do any better, then we sign and we e-file for you before April 15th.
Did in that infrastructure bill that passed a week or so ago, was there some of that regulation of the banks notifying of transactions? I remember there was talk about that in there.
It was, and it's the magic number was $10,000. And I haven't read that piece, but it seems like it's going to be almost kind of like what's required of the brokers, like a 1099 consolidated.
But I know they were talking about banks doing notifications of $600 or more as well.
I don't know if that hit the final bill, but specifically dispositions or sales. If you sell something, whoever is the intermediary is required, according to this bill, to send you a 1099. And so I think that's specifically directed at crypto, where it might not have been 1099 reporting in the past on that stuff.
Yeah, well, they've been tightening down on that. And yes, there was specific language in this recent bill regarding the $10,000, exceeding $10,000, they've got to notify the IRS. And if you're out there dealing in cryptos and think you're outside of the view of the IRS, you are mistaken there. And you better, you know what, it's better to come clean instead of getting that notice 2 years from now that you forgot to pay them or you forgot to put something on your tax return. That's okay. We did it for you and here's what you owe. They will do that. So it's just better to come forward on profits because they are on the hunt for it. And I think there's more regs coming and it's not just regarding cryptos. It's kind of all areas. They're working on getting more notifications of cash transactions as well, where and that's one of the tax avoidance tools, dealing in cash. So if you're running cash through your bank account, they may be notified in the future about stuff like that. Let's see.
Yeah, a lot of people don't know
there's a
10-year statute of limitation on capital gains transactions. with what they're talking about beefing up the IRS's enforcement, it could very well be that they get enforcement built up and then go retro back 6-8 years, because you have 10 years that you have to prove your cost basis on a capital gain transaction. If you didn't report it in crypto, boy, the information's not going to get any cleaner 8 years from now.
So they, once you've done your return, they can go back 10 years if you left something out. Okay, so if you don't do
a capital gains transaction.
Okay, so if you don't do a return, how far can they go back?
The statute doesn't begin to run. So you,
that's a good point. That's all I wanted you to say, is it doesn't start until you do a return. So it's really important to that. So I know on your blog, you've got some articles regarding cash gen on depreciation, tax savers, steer clear of wash rule if you're selling stock by year end. So you've got a good bit of tips over there at jheathcpa.com. Thank you for being with us this week, Jude, and take care out there, okay? Another thought from Warren Buffett. I thought this was pretty good. He says, there's only one word you have to really become good at. Well, he says that about a lot of things there, but this was an interesting take, and it's something I've shared with others, and it's something my wife, for example, has had a weakness of. And that's using a three-letter word saying yes to requests. And so you know where I'm going with this. It's the no word, that you actually can say no. If somebody's trying to sell you something, you don't want it, it's okay to say no. If somebody's calling you on the phone, you know, one of those spam calls or whatever, it's okay to say no. Take me off your list. And if you hate that word, let's put another one in to create a pause. You know, I'm going to have to sleep on it. I'll get back to you tomorrow. See, we're talking about no, but there's also, if you kind of hate that awkwardness, well, just kind of do it as a deferral. You know, I really need to think about this. Yeah, there's no would be real easy, but you can't do that. You know, I hate doing that. Okay, well, let me think about it. Let me get back to you tomorrow. Let me get back to you next week. You know, I have a IT company following up with me, and actually I'm okay for them calling me back in the future, because it's kind of like I keep them hanging out there in case I become unhappy with the IT firm I'm using. And I just said, hey, I'm not interested in doing anything at this time. And I've told them that several times. They asked, well, can I follow back up with you? I said, yeah, that'd be fine to touch bases with me in a few months just to see where I'm at. I've not made any commitment to do anything, to sit down and talk again or anything. Is, yeah, you can follow up with me. Now, if they ask me, you know, because one of the things I think of is getting to the truth. If he was to pinpoint me, and if I was asked this way, he did a follow-up question. Yeah, I can follow up with you, but do you think there's any chance, Gregory, you might change one day? I could, but I probably won't unless something goes wrong. So that's kind of leading to truth, which would cause them to say, you know what, I'm not calling him anymore. So sometimes you could even tell them, you know, it's just, you know, I'm going to think about it, but I'm probably not going to go forward, if that helps you out. So you could even share a little bit more from that situation. So sometimes we're talked into buying, spending money, or donating money. And our daughter, something happened to her recently. She's buying gas and somebody walks up to her asking for something. They were probably asking for money or something, or maybe trying to sell something. I don't know. But, she shared the conversation with me. She says it's very awkward. She hates that. And I said, just tell them to stop. Just stop. I'm not interested in anything at all. And just ask them if they've gotten too close into your space, ask them to step back. I think that's a safety thing. And personally, I tell you what, I hate it. I see somebody approaching me, I'm going to ask them. I ask them to stop. I'd say, I appreciate you not entering my space. I'm not interested. And you know what? That works like 99% of the time, because I'm serious when I say it. My tone is serious. And generally, people won't tell them to stop or step away. I think most people are kind of passive on that. So I think no is a good help. And I think no can help save you some money. And no can help you avoid losing money. And it also, no helps you avoid doing things you don't want to do. But, you know, if you think about it later and say, you know, I think I will go back and buy that, or I think I will call them back, well, then do that later. But it created that pause so you can be comfortable in going forward. You know, we had Medicare premiums. They're going up. We had also back in October, Social Security announced that there's a 5.9% increase coming to your Social Security income coming. They also projected that Medicare premium, standard premium, was going to go up 6.7%. They missed it. It was a swing and a miss. The standard premium for Part B will be $170.10 next year. They had estimated that it was going to be $158.50. That standard premium will jump by 14.5% in 2022. That deductible for Part B will be $230, up $30. That's a 14.8% increase. And your deductible for Part A hospital coverage per benefit period, which generally starts when you're admitted to the hospital, will be $1,556 in 2022. That's up $72 from last year's amount of $1,484. So Social Security benefits are going up, but so is that Medicare coverage, the premium and deductibles. There's a number of strategies that we have trademarked that we help people with, the Invest 50-50 philosophy. And it's really built on four asset classes that keep us in rotation with increasing the probability of money always continuing forward for you. Because ultimately, in success investing is a long-term win goal. What and who can help you reach that financial destination? And that's what you're making the decision on. It's not what, is he a really great stock picker? Does he know where the best ETF is? Everybody can kind of help you with ETFs, mutual funds, annuities, stocks, and so forth. Might should be situations where you want to make sure they don't help you with some things. That's like you sitting down in a first meeting and they're talking to you about, you know, 30% bonus on an annuity. They know that's appropriate. And that 30% bonus really isn't a cash bonus. It's only on the income rider. They might just forget some of the details. But why are you having that discussion on the first visit? Or they get into product talk and like, oh, we got these non-tradable REITs, pay this yield. And you're like, wow, that kind of return? Well, they did mention non-tradable. See, I kind of have three core rules I always speak about when I give talks publicly. And there's kind of three core rules. First, avoid losing money. It's a mindset. I hate losing money. I like to keep my money. Is that perfection all the time? Absolutely not. But you've got a mindset is like, yeah, I really don't want to get parted from it. And it's also, I don't want to be put out of the game. I want to keep playing. Meaning, I'm speaking of investment, savings, growing your wealth. You don't want the compounding to stop. Don't invest in a way that you could lose everything, meaning get put out the game. Second, have your money making money when it should. I don't think all four asset classes, and we kind of build that with the tactical, I kind of define as my fourth one, is that all money shouldn't be working all the time. Some portions should be shifting considering the environment and be built for that. But some money should never exit as well from that standpoint. And here's the third one, the return of the return of your money is more important than the return on your money. You know, so then what we're getting into is, what are my risks? What are my exits? You know, that's why you're wanting that third question there. And if you're looking for some help on my day job, the office number is 504-832-9200. Offices in Gulfport, Mississippi, Metairie, Louisiana, Mandeville, Louisiana, and Baton Rouge, Louisiana. And the website's gregoryricks.com. That number again is 504-832-9200.
Kevin in Springfield, you're on Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks. How can we help you, Kevin?
How you doing today?
Hey, Kevin. Good. You?
Hey, I'm doing good, sir. My kind of question for you is, I'm going to retire in a couple of years, and I'll have about the difference, the retirement coming from my company. I can take a lump sum of about $700,000, or I can take a monthly annuity kind of deal of about $3,500 a month. How do you decide which way to go with that? Because I can't figure out which way is the best way to go with that.
Well, first off, I kind of look at what is the percentage of that. When the lump sum tells you the value, so that's $700K in that case. So the other thing I'm going to look at is what, and you're at $3,500 a month, so that's $42,000 a year. So then you're kind of looking at the $700K. One of the questions I ask is that annual payment more or less than 5% of distribution on the assets. So a 5% distribution on $700K is easy. That's $35,000. So you're more than that at $42,000. So if it's under 5%, it would be more a serious consideration of taking the lump sum. But you're getting neighborhood of what, 6% from that number?
Yeah, and that's,
yeah,
and that's
actually it is 6%. Yeah. Now, if you died, would that check continue to your wife, the 42?
Yes, the same amount.
The same amount. Okay. That's an important question. And that's the way I look at it. If you're a single guy, then that's probably a different number. But when you look at retirement, you have to look at spousal continuation. I don't care any other numbers. I like that 100% payout. So we're at 6%. You know, that's pretty solid return out there for that. So as far
as
let's compare it to market. You know, the S&P 500's averaged a little over 8% the past 21 years, but it doesn't make 8% every year. For it to actually have to reach the equivalent, you've got to be at about 6.25% going forward with a gain every year to reach the equivalent of that 8. Because that 8's high because it has to make up losses, like in 2008 and like in 2018. So you get that. So 6% is a strong return. So then we shift to, what is your confidence in that company to be around another 30 years or so?
Yeah, very, very high. It's a very good oil refining company. So I think it's in good shape in that regard.
Yeah, it don't look like we're going to run out of oil and they're going to go broke.
No, I don't think so. I don't care how they want to do it, but I don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah, so that's kind of the two parts to think about. And this isn't what, $700,000. Let's get that $700,000 so I can go manage it. No, I like the idea of that. Here's one thing. Even if we did consider it, the other part is you can't mess that money up. And first, you can't go get $42,000 off of that. You're going to be getting, you know, probably a 4% income stream on it. So you're going to give up 2% in income out there. And from your standpoint is, I don't need somebody to mess up my $700,000. You might be better off taking the pension. Me as an advisor in getting to know you, I have to, like, if this was a situation where that lump sum compared to the payments was, say, like 4.5, you know, could we take the lump sum, and is he going to be a good steward of the money going forward? Because we don't need this. This needs to last you a long time. So this is how I think about it. And I think your 6% off of that's pretty solid, and you like the company. So that kind of answers your question.
Yes, sir, it does.
Okay.
I got another question for you. Maybe you could answer for me. So I'm going to retire. I own, let's say, a $250,000 home in Texas. I own the same $250,000 home here in Springfield, Louisiana. And from a tax standpoint, I was really trying to catch the last guy also. I don't know whether I should become a resident of Texas or stay a resident of Louisiana. Let's say if I'm bringing home, you know, when I do Social Security, it'll probably be $90,000 to $100,000 a year between the two.
Well, from an income standpoint, we know Texas is going to be more favorable. I think Mississippi's a little more favorable than Louisiana as well. So that's probably something where you'd probably sit down with a CPA. Now, what we do in our firm is we, you know, if you're working with us, we look at your 1040 and run an analysis every year. And we could look at that in income scenarios, also in where you live scenarios to kind of forward look. What's the opportunities out there? Is there some efficiencies? Do you plan to keep both houses going forward?
Yes.
Okay. Well, then they get in the
kind of put the time between two places.
Guys. Yeah. And wherever you're supposed to be living and paying taxes, I think you're probably supposed to have more time there. So keep that in mind in how you do stuff. But I would get a little bit of CPA advice on that, because what you don't want is somebody coming after you later. We want that difference in taxes. You owe us too. Some of these states are kind of greedy. I hear New York really chases down people that move away as well. So,
okay.
But you have options, so congrats on that. Thanks for listening to the show, Kevin. If you're leaving a job, we had somebody call a few weeks ago and came up, says, yeah, they're making us get these shots, and I'm probably going to be working elsewhere, so what do I do with the 401k? Well, you can move it to the new job if they have one. Even if you can't become a part of it, generally, you can move that money and open it up. You just can't do contributions to it until the firm allows that to happen. You could leave it at the old job. You could roll it over to an IRA, and that gives you a whole host of choices there. Go to GregoryRicks.com/401k. GregoryRicks.com/401k, and you can have a little bit of help on that. Want to bring some news to you. You know, we've been doing this show for over 11 years, and a little bit of change is coming, and James Parker has worked with me for all of that time. He took a break for about a month or two back in the day. I don't remember.
That was
It was 3 weeks, and he missed me so much, he came back to the show, but he's making a change here, and next Saturday will be his last day on the show.
Yep.
Something that we've done this for going on 12 years. We won't quite make it as a team that far. You'll be missed, but go ahead.
Well, I'm just originally from the middle of nowhere, East Texas. It's right outside of Bug Tussle, and I've been in
similar to like East Abuchi.
Yeah. It's
Mississippi.
Yeah, I mean, it's not that cosmopolitan, but similar. But when I moved to the New Orleans area 15 years ago, I was a happy little bachelor, and now I'm married with 4 children, and we've always kind of had 2 magnets here. My family, my wife's family's from here, my family's from East Texas, and we've spent about half of my kids' childhood here, and it's kind of nice that we found an opportunity where we can go back and they can be raised around their other family. You know, and it's different, you know, the big city life here in New Orleans, the hustle and bustle, you know, the crime, the potholes, you know, we're trading that out to go somewhere to where you don't necessarily
cow pastures.
Yes. Cow pastures. You don't necessarily have to wear shoes every day, you know, so it'll be good for them to get the other side of the cultural divide. Cause me and my wife are 2 peas in a pod, but we came from very different backgrounds. So that's where we're going to be headed. And just happy that we can go and, be with the other side of the family for a while.
Well, I know you've been talking about that for a while and knew it one day you were hoping to make that shift. So we wish you the best on that, but we're going to keep you around for another week. We won't let him leave quite yet. Do that and get some more James Parker into the mix. So we're on weeknights as well as Saturdays. So James will be here with us next Saturday.
Well, sure.
And one more time. If y'all want to give him a hard time or something, you can call.
Yeah, feel free to give me a hard time. I love hard times. I also love the fact that just sitting next to you for 11 years, when I'm at family gatherings or, you know, parties at friends' house or in some public setting and people don't really know who I am and financial situations come up, I start running my mouth because I'm just repeating stuff I've overheard on this show for a decade. And they're like, what are you? You a banker? Are you a financial advisor or something? What are you, a tax accountant?
Did you stay at Holiday Inn?
No, I stayed at Holiday Inn Express like 4 years ago, and it just stuck with me so good. No, it's funny because I think that there's regular listeners to this show who have gone through that situation. So new listeners, if you're like, look, I know this isn't the most sexy and exciting show ever, but the information here is good and it's solid and it's important that you know some of this stuff because you're going to be faced with all of these financial forks in the future. You don't know which one you're going to be faced with, but if you know all of them and you get there with a little bit of a body of information, you're probably going to make better decisions than if you hadn't listened to this show. So I can literally say this show has made me a better person.
Thank you.
Yeah. Hey, I'm better able to provide for my family and make decisions that will have a better impact, make fewer mistakes. And that can happen.
Well, that is what the show's about, is making better financial decisions.
Right. So for the guy listening, that's you if you stick around. That's you if when you're mowing the lawn and you're going to listen to some podcast, listen to this one, either the Winning It Life or the Ask Gregory podcast. If you're goofing around on other Saturday mornings and you happen to turn on the radio, stop on this show. It can happen to you. And it's just little bits that stack up. And after years and years of listening, you too will have a nice little financial foundation that you can build on.
Stephanie Pomboy, which we follow, I get alerts from her on Twitter. I'm not a big Twitter guy, but I do get notifications and check them out. I don't know that I post anything there. Probably should, but don't. Or I have somebody else doing it for me, probably, in that case. Hurdles on the horizon, new crypto regulation, and there's a, in the infrastructure bill Congress passed recently, there's digital asset provisions. They've got a regulations that require any party involved in the exchange of digital assets to register as a broker and report all cash payments exceeding $10,000 to the IRS. They're wanting to know about the money out there. And what Stephanie basically was saying is, yeah, this shouldn't surprise you, and there's going to be more coming. One facet of the bill requiring attention is the new reporting standards laid out by the IRS. Also, the SEC is continuing to enact new rules and regulations that will make digital assets more centralized markets. Shutting down Coinbase's lending program was a move towards centralized future that exemplified the governing body's increased desire to structure and provide, and here's the important part, providing utmost protection to the investor and ensuring lenders to stay whole. They don't want people taken advantage of, and you'll probably see this at some point considered a security. And if you're having anything to do with it or trying to get people or giving them advice on it, I would say start thinking of it as a security because I believe that is where it's going. Social Security, can it be the best annuity you can buy? You know, how about framing, viewing Social Security claiming decision as an annuity purchase? Think about it this way. By starting at age 70 instead of 62, the retiree misses 8 years of receiving benefit of $22,500. But starting at 70 provides a retiree a net increase in benefits of $17,100 per year for long as he or she lives. The 8 years of lost benefits could be viewed as a premium payment for the $17,100 inflation-adjusted lifetime income starting at age 70. So, you know, once again, think of it outside the box. By not claiming until 70, the eight-year loss of Social Security benefits comes to $180,000. You might think, ooh, ouch. But this is a slight overestimation as it assumes a 0% real interest rate. positive real rates are available from tips. This may seem like a big loss, but the $180,000 can be viewed as a premium for a deferred income annuity with inflation-adjusted income of $17,100 annually beginning at 70. The implied payout rate on the annuity provided by delaying Social Security is, get this, 9.5%. This is quite attractive when compared to commercial annuities. A deferred income annuity like this offers a valuable additional provision which cannot be purchased commercially, as no company offers a product with inflation protection for the initial payment amount. Though inflation protection is available as an option after income begins, today's marketplace demands you calibrate real expected income from a deferred income by using an assumed inflation rate, which will probably turn out to be a little off in the end. You know, so some of this decision also has to do with how long you're going to live. And if you're of great health, couple, and this is a larger check, and you've both made it to 65, guess what? One of you probably is going to live to the 90s. And this is a lot of payout for a long period of time. So think about it a little bit differently.
Bill and Pascagoula, you're on Winning It Life with Gregory Ricks. How can we help you, Bill?
Hi. Well, I enjoy listening to your show. And since you're working today and my usual financial advisor isn't, I thought I'd ask you guys. I came across something this morning on the internet. I don't like getting my information from the internet as far as financial things, but they call them I-bonds.
Yep.
And right now where they say they're putting them out at 7.12%. I think it's a five-year pair. I've done a little bit of research on it, but I just wanted to know what Mr. Rick's opinion of these were.
They're good. You just can't put a lot of money into it.
I believe they're limited. I think I saw $10,000 a piece.
Yep. Yep, but they're inflation adjusted. Yeah, they're really paying good right now. So it's good short-term money for small amounts out there. They'd be getting flooded if they would open that up, because that is a pretty darn good price.
Well, I find myself, I usually max out my annual contributions there, even with the catch-up. And the family sold some property, and I've got, again, ideally $20,000 that we got to find someplace to go, and the CD rates just aren't cutting it. And from my understanding, you hold these for a year, and then you pay a small penalty if you can't keep it in there for the entire 5 years.
Yeah, there's some penalty on the exit of that before the period, but there's a limit to how much you can put in. So it gives you another choice out there, especially in this high inflation environment. It does give you another choice. Did you go over to treasurydirect.com to take a look at it?
That is where I looked at it. It looks like they only do these in a paperless account online. So
yep, that's correct as well. So but that's where you can take advantage of it there as well. Can't send them a check. So it kind of is, in a way, it's a little restricted, isn't it? But it's a good yield on a little bit of money.
Does the 0% guaranteed interest rate bother you much?
No. Isn't that what, if you were in the market, you could have a negative return, actually, as a possibility out there on that. But, you know, you're assuming that, I think we're going to have inflation for a little bit, but we're not going to have it at this level a long time, because how many times in the past 170 years have we had 7% or more inflation? 20 times. So the stock market, if you go to the past 100 years and look at what is the highest inflation years, there's 15 of them. And what did the market do? 7 years, the market was up. Go back. Let me clarify. Last 100 years, we take the highest 15 inflation years, and they're all separate. They weren't consecutive, but we take those 15 years, we group them together, and the market was up 7 years, down 8 years, and had an average return of 2.5%. So I'd say this 7% on the I-bonds is a pretty good deal on that amount of money. The market history doesn't tell us that. out there. And obviously those years were over 7% as well from that period of time. Hopefully that helps, Bill. Thanks for calling and asking about it.
Thank you, Bill. Quick correction. You said treasurydirect.com. I believe it's treasurydirect.gov because there's a website on both.
Thanks for the correction.
Yeah, I just remember you said it different in the past, so I don't know which Gregory's correct.
Yeah, it's .gov.
Okay.
Well, you know, you can be used to saying the .coms.
Oh, I do it all the time. There. Do it all the time.
Yeah. But that's how that works on getting treasuries out there. We've talked about that site off and on, and there's even a section out there, how do I buy? And it's called Buying Series I Savings Bonds. And the news is here is the initial interest rate on Series I Savings Bonds is 7.12%. You can buy that rate through April of 2022. So this isn't a window. You get to sleep on it. You could go do it next week. And they give you a lot of information on what's an I bond. And what's the interest rate, which we just shared with you because of the caller brought it up, 7.12% on that bond. You buy them in electronic form from their online program over there at Treasury Direct. You can buy them in paper form using federal income tax refund. That's interesting. I was not aware of that. So if you're getting a refund, you can do so. How much can you put in I bonds? Up to $10,000 in electronic I bonds in Treasury Direct, up to $5,000 regarding your federal tax refund. The limits apply separately, meaning you could acquire up to $15,000 in I bonds in a calendar year. So you can't turn around, well, I'm going to go buy one every week. No, they're actually limiting you. So it's kind of like part of your emergency savings can be put in I bonds. So consider that as well. Three Social Security strategies to bankroll your retirement. You know, this is something where I share when I speak publicly as well at events is if you haven't saved money, you don't have enough. But one thing I always tell everybody, you have time. If you're 80, you have time to save. There's some things you can do. But more of this comes up when somebody gets to 60 and they start panicking, or 50, 55, like, gosh, I don't have enough. You have time. You're likely to live to 90. Unless you've got some health problems, you can shorten it. Two numbers you have to have. A retirement date, which gives you your age at that date, and then how long do you think you're going to live? Because that's what you're going to need income for that period. So one of the first strategies is to delay your filing as long as possible. And you can defer up to age 70. I talked about that as that strategy could be the best annuity money could buy when you think of it in that terms as a premium for a higher deferred income. And it's and you live past 80, you are getting ahead. You absolutely are. The other I think is really important is coordinate with your spouse for a boosted benefit. And it may help you for the spouse situation could be to turn theirs on earlier and you defer yours because one of you is going to leave a larger check behind and it is going to pay longer than the other check. And the last, and I was having a discussion earlier this morning about this, and that's to make sure you get in 35 years of earnings because Social Security is based upon your best 35 years. So if you're working beyond 35 years, you're replacing earlier years. If you're retiring with less than 35 years, say it's 30 years, they're plugging in zeros for 31, 32, 33, 34, 35, and they're averaging it there. So if you've worked 35 years, you do not have any zeros in, and you're creating a larger benefit. So a couple thoughts there for those, and you still have time, but those to try to get more for later. If you need some help, 504, here's my office number, my day job. We can help you. And you don't have to become a client. You can just ask a question. Call the office, 504-832-9200. The website is gregoryricks.com.
And you're home away from the show, gregoryricks.com. You can also find the events tab at the top and see when Gregory's doing some speaking events. You can leave questions there. And remember, download the Winning at Life app. And next time you listen to podcasts, whatever app you're on, go find Winning at Life. And it means a whole lot to us if you give us a follow. I'm James Parker. We are Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks.
Investment advisory services offered through AE Wealth Management, LLC. Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks is for informational purposes only and does not recommend the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, legal advice, or tax advice. Investing involves risk, including potential loss of principal. Roth conversion is a taxable event and may have several tax-related consequences. Be sure to consult with a qualified tax advisor before making any decisions regarding your IRA. The information and opinions contained herein are provided by third parties and have been obtained from sources believed to be reliable, but accuracy and completeness cannot be guaranteed. Neither AE Wealth Management nor advisors providing investment advisory services through AE Wealth Management recommend or facilitate the buying or selling of cryptocurrency. The firm is not affiliated with the U.S. government or any governmental agency. The firm offers insurance services. We are Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks.